Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to XYZ, the podcast about business, CNC, robotics, space, and more. My name is Aaron Goff, owner of Goff Custom Knives, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nick Frank, from the Frank Brothers Guitar Company. How are you, mate?
I'm good.
What's happening? Well, it's been a while since we got to chat. My life has been crazy the last couple of weeks.
We are just a couple busy guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, okay, so the big news, I'm gonna post something in chat right now. You can have a look at it. This is the big news.
This seems to be an unfamiliar property to me.
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay.
So
it's gorgeous, stunning.
Thank you. So yes, we finally bought a house.
Okay, so this is happening.
This is done.
Because there was a little bit of a potential hiccup earlier with a different property.
Kerfuffle.
Yeah, wow, I mean, the shop in here.
Nick's just got halfway through the album.
How big is it?
It's a bit over 2,000 square feet, I think.
Holy fuck, dude.
Yeah, that was the thing that made it for us, man. Like,
this is better than the last place.
Oh, yeah, way better.
So that was a blessing.
Absolutely. Yeah, so basically, for those of you that don't know, what happened is we put an offer in on a property that was accepted. The problem is the real estate agent said to me that it was mixed residential and commercial zoning, which turned out to not be true. It was just commercial zoning. And the banks don't want to lend against commercial property unless you have a lot of money to throw down. Like, they were talking like 35% down payment and like 6% interest. Those kinds of numbers. Like, it was pretty wild. This place that we actually ended up buying also was a bit of an interesting situation because it's partially commercial. It's not technically commercial, actually. It's rural with a commercial exemption. So you have all of the allowed home industry uses plus a proper commercial exemption.
Okay. So,
And the problem was, as soon as lenders saw that, they were like, nope, having that little C for commercial on the listing instantly disqualified me from like 90% of the lenders.
You told me that and I was like, that can't be fucking true. That seems crazy. But yeah, I didn't realize it was 100% commercial, the last property, because it had a house on it.
Yeah. Yeah. But the residence on that property was an accessory building to the commercial building.
That's
not
so
the
funny.
Other way around. Yeah.
Well, why the fuck did they do that?
I don't know. So yeah, it's been a bit of a wild ride. And like, literally, like, the real estate agent thought, no, it's not going to be a problem. No problem at all. You know, the first mortgage broker that we talked to was like, oh, no problem. And yeah, and then we were, you know, just a couple of days away from our finance condition running out and hadn't closed a mortgage. Like, hadn't been able to secure a mortgage. So
was there any penalty to that?
No, thankfully. We would have just lost the property.
Right.
But basically, it just explained the situation to the sellers. They seem really lovely. So we ended up extending the finance condition by another week, which is like, so for people that don't know what the Toronto market is like and the market around Toronto, usually if you have a condition at all on your offer, they just toss your offer right in the garbage. Mm-hmm. Like they just don't even look at it. Conditional offers are really unusual. So we had to like add a little extra juice to the deal, I think partly because of that. But yeah, they were willing to extend the offer. And during the home inspection, we found some issues too. Like the septic was kind of fucked. And there was radon in the basement. The
fuck is that?
It is a very fun, natural, radioactive gas that leaches out of the ground. It is the second leading cause of lung cancer after cigarettes.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that doesn't sound good.
No, but thankfully, like, the radon remediation is actually pretty simple. You basically, like, core a hole through the slab in the basement of your house, and then you set up, like, a ventilation system.
Okay,
so pulls air out. And
so this was the old house that you didn't get?
No, this is the house that we did get. But so the sellers, upon seeing both of these issues with the home inspection, they were like, oh, my God, we're so sorry. We'll fix them.
Really?
Yeah.
Where is this place?
It's about 2.25 hours outside of Toronto.
So in the Peterborough area, though, right?
In the Kawathas.
Kawathas, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, so cool. Yeah. It's a little bit more rural than the last property, which was on a bit of a main highway. This seems
I like that it's not right next to a highway. That's the last place was like literally
It would have been fine. It was, you know, probably not a... It's not like the 401 or something. It was just a two-lane highway. No. But this is nice. This is a little more quaint.
Yeah. So this place is 5 acres, a bit over a 2,000 square foot shop.
5 acres?
Yeah. Wow. And the house is practically brand new. It was built in 2010.
Wow. Yeah. It's a really cool, like, it's got a beautiful front porch.
Well, and that front porch is all screened in.
Yeah. I can see that. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Wow, dude. This is
so. Yeah, I'm stoked. I still can't believe that it's actually happening.
Yeah. You did secure a mortgage.
Yes.
On this.
Yes. Excellent. A Canadian credit union called Desjardins came through. In fact, we actually got the listing. So this is one interesting thing that people, if anyone else is kind of in this situation, this is a super handy thing to know. If you you know, so for us, we found that it wasn't really commercial. It was rural with a commercial exemption, which isn't the same thing as far as the banks are concerned. Mm-hmm. So then we went back to the seller's agent and had them amend the listing to remove all mentions of commercial.
Oh, because that the listing is what gets sent to the bank?
Yes. And that would have potentially opened up a lot of extra lenders, right. Except thankfully we'd already, like, you know, those things happened at the same time. We managed to secure finance from Desjardins at the same time as that happening.
It's a good bank, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know much about them, but it's a name brand.
So yeah, it's been a bit of a wild ride as you can tell, but
what a cool space though. Like the shop looks stunning.
Yeah. So the guy that had the place, I guess he was like, you know, car enthusiast of some kind. So it's set up as a,
yeah, it looks garage. Like you can drive right through it.
Yeah, you can. And the hoist comes, it has a two-post hydraulic hoist, and it comes with the property.
Do you want that?
Yeah, I do, actually. And they're quite expensive.
Change your own tires.
Well, I'm planning on building a race car, so that'll be helpful.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
So where's your mill going to go? Mills.
So there's basically three spaces right now in the shop. There is one large room, which I think is like 1200 square feet ish, with like 12 foot ceilings, and that is going to be like the machine shop, that main room,
right?
And then there's an office space off to one side. The office space must be like 600 square feet, like it's pretty big, 500 square feet.
Wow.
I'm going to carve off just the front of that to have as office space, maybe like 200 square feet. I really don't want much space, and then the rest of that will be divided off and then given access from the machine shop so I can use it as like storage, maybe like a clean room kind of area, like electronics and stuff. And then there's a whole back section. There's like basically another building butted up to the back of this whole thing that we're talking about so far. And that's going to be like the dirty shop. So working on cars, welding, grinding, that kind of stuff.
Is that where the car hoist is?
No. Currently, the car hoist is in the area that will become the clean space.
So you're just going to move it?
Yeah, going to move it. And I might have to reinforce the slab where it gets moved to.
Do you know how thick the slab is?
No, but if it's thick enough to put a hoist on like that, then it's pretty thick.
Mm-hmm. How come you don't think the other side is as thick?
I just don't think it was like poured for the hoist, you know. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see. I might do cores on both sides and get a definitive answer, you know. But yeah, so it's been a wild ride. Wow. It's been like,
congratulations. This is huge. I like it better than the other property.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we like it. We like it more too.
That would have been a great property too, but you know.
But that one would have required a bunch of work because the shop on that other property was, the ceilings in it were only 8 feet, which is not tall enough for the CNC machines.
Yeah, that seemed like an annoying problem to have to solve.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wouldn't have been too bad, but it would have been like actual work to fix it. Whereas like this place, I'm going to spend some time tidying it up, making it
look nice.
It
looks like it needs to be freshened up. Not the house. Yeah. The house looks perfect.
House looks amazing. Yeah.
How many beds in the house?
Two. Okay. But so I have a guess. They don't show this in the, well, so wait for it. They don't show this in the photos, and I don't know why they didn't. There is a unfinished basement that's the full footprint of the house. Hmm. So another 1,200 square feet, and it has 9-foot ceilings.
Oh, what?
Yeah, it was like designed from the get-go to be finished, and I guess they never did it.
So you guys are going to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you get like another 2 or 3 bedrooms downstairs.
That's amazing. It's funny because the house kind of looks like maybe it's just sitting on top of the earth. It doesn't necessarily look like it has a basement.
It does. Big one.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. This is huge. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. So yeah, it's super exciting. And I mean, one thing I wanted to talk about that came out of this, I mean, we don't normally talk finances directly on the show, but I think I'm going to in this case, because the mortgage is like a scary amount of money. Mm-hmm. Like when you say, oh, it's going to be $4,000 a month for this place, which is like, that's a lot of fucking money.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
But the reason I wanted to talk about this is because of what kind of pushed me into seeing that as okay, which is, so right now I pay $2,000 a month for my rented shop plus $1,600 a month for the apartment, right? Mm-hmm. So that's $3,600 already. And the apartment, they are only allowed to raise the rent 3.5% a year, mm-hmm. but they do it every year, right? They don't want to miss out on that money. And at the shop, the contracted increase in the lease is 5% a year for every year during the lease term. Mm-hmm. And then in between lease terms, so they'll only give you like a 3-year lease. And in between lease terms, they get to raise it as much as they want.
Yeah, I've been through it. It's awful.
Yeah. So I did the math and I basically said, okay, so let's say they only raise it 10% at that lease jump, which is probably very optimistic. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 5% and 3.5% everywhere else. That means in 5 years, I'd be paying $4,700 or $4,800 a month in rent.
Right. And that's if you want to stay in that place, even that apartment, which you've been at for a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe you try to go find a new apartment. You're not going to be paying.
No, I mean, close to a lot more. Yeah. So
they decide to renovate that place or something. You get evicted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, people in markets outside of Toronto, like, you know, there are definitely some markets where it's like way cheaper than this. And we did look at moving to somewhere that was just substantially cheaper. But as you know, it's just really difficult when you have family and friends close by. It's pretty hard to justify just leaving everyone.
Mm-hmm. Just for cheaper living.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that is nice. But
yeah. But yeah, with that in mind, having done that calculation, being like, holy shit, like if I do the safe thing by doing nothing, and I'm saying safe, quote unquote, you know, by doing nothing, then within 5 years, I'm going to be paying like almost $5,000 a month in rent.
Right.
And that money just
zero equity.
Yeah, exactly. So after I saw that, I was like, okay.
Well, yeah, you wait 5 years to do this. This house is going to be worth 50% more.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was a difficult decision. I wish that the market isn't the way it is, but within the bounds of, you know, what I have to work with, you know, and people that are living in smaller communities in Canada or in the US will be like, holy fuck, what are these rent prices? You know, like, and that's a completely reasonable, like, oh fuck moment, to be honest.
Oh yeah. I mean, in Toronto, you're looking at, you could be paying $1,800 for a one bedroom, if you're lucky, a bachelor, probably more likely.
I know someone that's paying, it's a nice apartment, right? But I know someone that's paying $3,500 a month for a two bedroom apartment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's, yeah. Last apartment I rented was $2,500 a month for two bed, and it was,
yep,
okay.
it was okay. Yeah, so it's pretty wild. I mean, one other thing I'm super excited about is you saw the shop. It has a huge, the largest roof surface is in like the perfect orientation for solar panels.
Yeah, it's got a long sloped roof.
Yeah. In the right direction. So I'm super excited about the idea of just,
and it's steel.
It is a steel roof. Yeah.
And it looks like it's in good condition. So you're in business. The house does have shingles, and we all know how you feel about shingles.
I do hate shingles. Those shingles are nearing the end of their life too. They've been on there for 10 years.
Shouldn't shingles last more than that?
Not really. Okay. 10 to 12 years. Yeah. Yeah. What I would like to do with that. So, the side of the house that doesn't have the patio, it doesn't really have much overhang on the roof. And that means, and with the way it's oriented, that means that in summer, it's going to get quite a lot of sun in through those windows.
Mm-hmm.
So the ideal thing to do is do all the calculations, work out where the sun falls in winter versus summer, because the sun is higher in summer than it is in winter. And you basically extend the roof, like the eaves, just enough to block the summer sun from those windows, but to allow it in winter. So you maximize the solar heat gain in winter, minimize it in summer, and then do that while we're installing a steel roof.
Right.
Right. So that's kind of the thought, but like, you know, this place is just going to be like a black hole for money for a while.
House is always kind of it's one of those things you just keep fixing up. And then something else goes, you know,
yeah,
new water heater.
Right. But I'm super excited about the idea of settling into a workshop.
This place
I've never
is
really
amazing,
had that opportunity.
Dude. Yeah. Like you can, yeah. This is, you can build the shop out to be the shop of your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
How big absolutely. Is the main area with the office? Like the main shop
with
area
the office?
Plus the office. You said there's a 600 square foot office.
I would say it's like 1600 square feet to 1800 square feet. Like it's pretty big.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think I have to do actual measurements at some
point. Do they have floor plans?
Not of the shop. No, unfortunately. But you walk in. I walked in and I was like, oh, okay. Holy shit. Cause he had like an F-150 on the lift. And then there was like, a couple of like ATVs and dirt bikes and stuff around it.
Right.
And you could still like, yeah, absolutely. And you could still like, you know, play a game of tag in there without running into stuff easily, you know? And then the back room had a huge power boat in it. Plus
yeah,
like
I saw
a pair
that.
Of ATVs and like, yeah.
Well, so that's what I'm saying. That back room the floor must be fine. If you can hold that.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out.
Okay. Wow. That's huge, dude.
So yeah, that's why I've been quiet, because like I've been working the day job, which has, you know, that was a bit of a complication in and of itself too, because I'm like going to banks and they're like, oh, how long have you been in your current job for? And I'm like, 1 month. And they're like, you know, so we worked through that, but you know, working full time plus like trying to keep the knife business ticking along while wrangling all the finances and stuff for all of the, you know, the shit you have to do to buy a house has been, it's a first world problem. I recognize that, but it's been very, very stressful.
Buying a house is like one of the most stressful things you do.
It's wild, dude. Like the process, they're like, oh, you see the house? And then like,
yeah, for, you know, 5 minutes. And then they're like, okay, would you like to sign your
put life in away? A, yeah, put in a no conditions offer, you know, in Toronto. So for people that aren't familiar, the average home price in Toronto is now like 1.6 million or 1.8 million.
Holy shit.
It's like for a detached home. It's fucking crazy. Oh,
for a detached home. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if someone wanted to like make sure they got that home, they would have to put in like an offer like 300K over asking with no conditions. You know, so you see
that much. Yeah. A bully offer. Yeah. Like houses go for 300K over without that happening. You know, just in like a regular bidding war. If you really wanted to put in a bully offer.
Right. It's just wild. Imagine like the situation you have to be in. You know, in seeing this place, we put a bully offer in because I was like, I don't want to deal with the bullshit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't go crazy with it, but we were basically
you
like,
show them you're serious.
You want, yeah, what are they looking for? Okay, like I'll.
And know. Did they take it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it didn't go to an offer night?
No.
Great.
No.
Those are stressful.
Yeah, been there a couple of times. So yes, that's why I've been quiet. It's been a bit of a wild ride, but yeah, I'm.
So do you have neighbors? I don't see any.
Far away. Very far away neighbors, yeah. And there is actually also a lake over that hill in the background.
Wow.
So it's like theoretically walking.
What's this
walking
path, this dirt path beside you?
It's like a right-of-way that goes on the side of the property that leads through to somebody else's. Someone else has like an off-grid cabin in behind us next to the lake.
Cool. So that's just somebody's driveway.
Basically, yeah.
Right. And that your property is not on it. It skirts your property.
That actually does go onto our property.
Oh, so they've got what's it called?
A right of way.
Right of way. Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's technically a right of way or it's just been.
There might be another name for it, what that's called.
Deeded path or something. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, we'll work that one out. I don't think it's going to be an issue.
Just put a fence up.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about that corner of the property. They can have it. So yeah, I feel very conflicted. I feel both very relieved and incredibly terrified.
When do you get like the keys? When do you move in?
June 15th.
Okay.
Yeah, which is coming up fast.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, enough about me. How are things with you, buddy?
Oh, that was very exciting. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. You've seen a lot of the ins and outs for this process.
Yeah, but you've made some, you know, some big moves. You talked a lot about it, and you actually did it. I thought you were full of shit.
So many people say that.
Yeah, I've been going well. I don't know if you saw on my Instagram last week, I wouldn't say crashed the machine.
Oh, no.
But I didn't really. I broke the optical tool setter. Just the brake stem. Like I crashed a tool into the tool setter when I was trying to set a tool. But
how did you manage that? Like you accidentally had it on the wrong off like step size?
I'll tell you. So the day before, the machine froze in the middle of this 3D contouring tool path, really long program. Just froze.
Just for like no reason?
Yeah. Didn't even give an error code.
And you've had a couple of issues like that now, right?
I've had the machine freeze in a program, but I could reset it, jog the spindle up, and start again. Mm. And part of me thinks I've been running off USB, you know, like I just move a big programs over to the memory and run it from there.
Right.
Which I've been trying to remember to do. It's just so convenient to run it off the USB.
Yep.
So this was not that though. This had just paused and the spindle had dropped a little as if it like turned off.
Oh.
And so it went into my workpiece, which was sweet.
Oh no.
Only like 10 thou.
Right.
And I couldn't jog the Z up. And I couldn't reset. I couldn't do G28 home. There's a button for that just sends all axes to home, or you can press you can just press in the individual axes and into that button, and it just put, you know, I could do Z G28 home and it just go up.
Right.
Wouldn't do any of that. So I had to power the machine down, turn it back on, and everything was fine. The next day, I go to run a part, and my Z height was just a little off. And I was like, well, I just changed this tool. Maybe I fucked up and didn't tighten it. I don't know. That made no sense still, because the tool was short. Seemed short. So I just went to go touch it off again. And it does the probing cycle where it brings the tool down close to the tip of the anvil, the tool setter anvil.
Yeah.
Starts spinning it backwards. And then it's just stopped like a 3/16 above the anvil. Mm-hmm. It just kept spinning, but it didn't touch, and it beeped as if it had touched it. I was like, well, what the fuck? And then it couldn't reset, couldn't jog the spindle up. I pressed this reset button, which stopped the spindle, but
right.
Anyways, so it wasn't turning anymore, but, I select my axes Z and go to jog it up, and it won't go. So I assume all the axes are frozen, right. Kind of like what happened the day before. So I go to jog it down just to confirm that suspicion. Stupid. And it jogs and crashed right into it.
Honestly, that doesn't sound like your fault.
Like, I was a little like puzzled at the, I'm like trying to workshop this. It's not like I made like a stupid, really stupid mistake. That was 100% my fault. I still take credit for doing it, because I did hand jog it right into it. But I just assumed it was frozen, which is a dumb assumption. But just up was frozen. It could go down.
That's weird, man. Have you talked to Haas about this?
Yeah.
What did they say?
Well, so I called Fabrizio.
Yeah.
Because I don't really have an apps contact.
Mm-hmm.
So any issue I've had, I've just called the sales guy. And he was like, let me just send me an email with that problem that you're having. And then I was like, and he was like, you know what? Let me just get the guy to call you. So
right.
One of the apps guys calls me later that day, and I explained the whole thing to him. And he was like, we've had that issue before. That's not the first time I've heard of it or seen it. It's not super common, but it's a Renishaw thing. Like, they won't let you jog the Z up if there's a tool setter or tool probe
active, I guess, right?
Basically it didn't turn off. The probe didn't turn off.
Yeah, right. So it's still active. In like probing mode.
Yeah. So he was like, I'm just gonna send somebody over to do a software update for you.
Yeah.
So next morning, 9 a.m., an apps guy is here, starts doing the software update. He brings me a brake stem to redo the tool setter. Cool. He even does it for me.
Nice.
Which I wasn't expecting. Didn't ask him to do that. It was nice because I could keep working, and I just like peppered him with questions the whole time he was here.
Right. And was there any cost associated with that?
Well, I got a bill for the brake stem.
Right.
And I got a bill, and my batteries were toast in the Renishaw, both the probe and the tool setter.
Oh, weird.
So that might have been part of the problem. It was running on low juice, you know?
Right.
So I paid their $25 per battery, and there's four batteries, two in each. But I didn't get a bill for the apps engineer's time.
Right.
My machine's technically still under warranty. It's a year old as of like the day before the guy came, but they had so when I bought the machine, like a week later after I bought it, I hadn't even signed the dotted line yet. They came out with this thing for Canadians where it's like, get a 2-year warranty if you buy a machine. So I was like, hey, can you guys hook me up with that? And they were like, I don't know.
Like, and you were pretty much do it.
Yeah. And so they were kind and they did it. And so I guess it's under warranty, but I didn't get a bill for that. I'm assuming I won't, because they're pretty Johnny on the spot with those other two bills.
Right.
So I was pretty pleased. The service was great. They were they didn't mess around. They were here. They sent a really qualified person, knew what they were doing, and they did that. It was kind of them to fix the tool setter.
Yeah. I was going to be like a little like, it's bad to be having software issues like that. But you know what? They're there and they fixed it. And like shit happens.
Yeah, I wasn't happy about that. Especially because it compromised a piece of work.
Yeah.
An extremely rare and expensive piece of Koa.
Oh, no.
So it was fine.
Was it salvageable?
Yeah, it's 10,000 that I have to sand out. No one will ever know. But it's extra work and it was annoying. And it set me back a day and a half.
Yeah, and probably some swearing.
Yeah, I was, I figured that brake stem was there to break. Like it looked like it was designed for that. But in my, my nightmares, I'm like, that I need, I'm like, oh, that's a $3,000. That's a $3,000.
Yeah,
probe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I didn't crash the probe or like break the probe body. I think that's like the common thing that people do. I don't know how many people crash and break their tool setter.
I think my favorite one is when somebody accidentally spins the tool probe up to max RPM.
Oh,
so, yeah. You know, I did that machine once. That'd be like 12,000 RPM. And you're like, fuck. And then it just comes apart. Oh. In the machine. Boom.
It should really be like, I wonder if there are like limits. So like I have mine designated as a probe.
Right.
So would it?
Probably is, yeah.
But maybe it would. Like they sometimes these machines are kind of dumb. but yeah, I did that. So I used to probe two datums on the Axis machine every morning with a dial indicator.
Right.
And there's a warm-up cycle I run every morning on the machine too.
Right.
So usually I run the warm-up cycle and then I probe the datums. And this way I just did it backwards for some reason. I wasn't thinking, hadn't had a coffee. So the tool, the dial indicator was in the probe when I warmed it up. So it just
at 10,000 RPM.
Yeah, I just flung this Mitutoyo, dial indicator across the room at full speed.
Jesus. Well, dial indicators can be purchased.
Yeah.
I'm just glad you weren't in front of it. I saw it. I think it was like Aspect CNC or someone on Instagram the other day posted a photo of their Haas, and both of the front windows in the doors were just absolutely shattered. Oh, and there was a massive dent in the middle, right in the middle in between the two doors. And he'd had a part come out of the vise and get thrown into the doors so hard that it had smashed both windows.
Wow. Completely.
But the part didn't leave the machine.
These windows, I mean, the ones on the sides are just like acrylic or plexi.
Right.
But these front ones are, I don't know what they're made out of, but they're pretty heavy duty glass.
Laminated glass, yeah. Mm. So they'd be like two layers of glass with a plastic bonding layer in the middle. Mm. Which is the same kind of stuff that they use for car windshields.
Okay. Well, yeah. I know I've heard people sing the praises of like Speedios or machines that have that like metal grid in the window for that reason. And I gotta say, I'm surprised more. Like, I don't know anything about lathes, but they look scary. And the idea of one of those, like the part coming out of a chuck and spinning at however many RPM going straight through a window.
You definitely see posts. I think by far the scariest thing that someone can do on a lathe is stick a long bar at the back of the lathe unsupported
and then
spin it up to high RPM.
I'm pretty sure that's have stickers on the machine saying don't do that.
Yeah, they definitely do. That's the shit that'll like kill you.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, so yeah, that worked out fine and it was cool. Like I haven't had any training on this machine like from Serco, who's the HFO.
Right.
So it was kind of sweet to have an apps guy here and just ask him a bunch of questions. And when he comes in, I'm always like I'm always like sensitive about the fact that we're not cutting metal on this, but like filling it with wood dust.
Right.
And he was like, whatever, you know, the thing's just cut. They'll cut whatever you want. You know, he's like, it's not so bad. Don't worry about it. Which made me feel a little bit better. I was telling him about that other issue we were having where, you know, we were having a tolerance problem where when we flipped apart, things weren't lining up. And just like with the tool length thing, he was like, you know, the reason I wanted to touch that tool off in the first place, he was like, I can't really speculate on what was causing these issues. Right. But his one piece of advice, which was like, I mean, we were doing this on the Axis machine. He said, just, you have a probe, just probe G54 every morning.
Right.
And
right. Just make sure.
And make sure you're in the right place. Because these machines rehome, they home themselves every time you turn them on.
Right.
And they're supposed to, you know, be accurate. But if you're, you know, our tables are stationary. Like these tables yeah. are mounted and we expect that to be repeatable every day. Whereas a lot of people, they probe in their work piece every time they do, you know, a new operation. Yeah. So that's,
yeah, I mean, the home position should be very repeatable. So the way that the home position on industrial machines works is that most of them, those that have limit switches anyway, mm-hmm. basically they go in one direction till they hit the limit switch or the homing switch, and then they move away from the homing switch and look for an encoder count. So there's basically one pulse per rotation on most encoders that's like the index pulse. So they don't actually use the homing switches to produce the home position. They just use that to track the end of travel, and then they move away from that to find the index pulse and then use that as the home position.
Okay.
That's because any type of switch, like mechanical or inductive, has a hysteresis, like basically differing. Every time you measure it, it's going to be slightly different.
Right.
Whereas that index pulse is like as accurate as the servo system can be. So,
yeah. And I mean, we haven't been doing this and it hasn't been a problem except for
occasionally.
Yeah. And I told him about,
it's a bit weird.
It was weird, you know, and it bothered me that, you know, we're trusting this machine to be accurate, but then I'm, you know, listening to him, he's saying, if you want to sleep better at night, basically you have a probe, just probe what you're doing. And that makes, right. that makes me feel like I have a solution to this. I don't have to just, sure. I just have to just blindly trust this machine, even though I'm right. sure it will be accurate 9 times or 99 times out of 100.
Right.
When I'm cutting out a guitar that I've already sunk 20 hours into, that's made out of wood, that's irreplaceable. I don't want to just assume it's going to work.
Yeah, 100%.
So I've got this probe and it's fucking so easy to use. Even if I was
just to spin it up to 12,000 RPM.
Yeah. Exactly. Even if I was just to use though, the pre-written template to probe a hole, it's pretty easy, but we can write our own to just automatically sort of go to a specific position and run a probing cycle.
Right. Yeah. It sounds reasonable.
So that was the excitement for last week.
Nice.
And, otherwise, we took like a bit of a hiatus from shipping guitars because we were out of cases.
Oh, right.
And
don't you hate it when something like that holds things up?
There's just always something. Like now we're almost out of shipping boxes. I got like 13 more shipping boxes. So now I got to order shipping boxes.
Right.
Which I wanted to make a big change to, but it's expensive because boxes, you need a die to make them.
Right.
We have a pretty custom box. So the die is like, I think, $2,500.
Oh, wow. Cole, I don't know if they... I don't know if it'll be too big, but there's a company in the States called Eco Enclose.
Okay.
Give them a call because they don't do dies. They do everything with a CO2 laser because they specialize in like relatively low volume stuff. And all of the cardboard that they use is 100% post-consumer recycled. And they use like fully biodegradable inks and stuff.
Cool.
I really like them as a company. They're like super interesting. And yeah, I've had like, you know, social media interactions with them, but I've heard good things.
Okay.
Give them a call.
I will. I might as well. It is a pretty custom box.
Right.
So
yeah. And if you have the option to like get rid of the die and like be able to make changes from order to order. It's super nice.
That would be great.
Speaking of accidentally endorsing companies, like a couple of episodes ago, I talked about Mr. Metal in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And Darren, my contact there, he called me up and he's like, hey, I got like a couple of people that came and said you told them to come here for metal and stuff. So like, thanks. He sent me some swag. He sent me like a camo hoodie and shit. It was very funny. I wasn't expecting that.
That's
tight. They were, I think I said on the show that the bent sheet metal that they did for me didn't work out. Which it didn't. We'll be honest about that. But I will say that they didn't give me any shit about it. They gave me 100% of my money back, like no problems at all. And I respect that.
Oh, that's more than you can ask for. That's like we always say it's like a customer service issue is a chance to give good customer service.
Yeah.
Show exactly the kind of customer service that you're capable of giving, that you care. It really does a lot. Even if you fuck up hugely.
Owning it, you know, making it right is it's a big
thing. People almost respect it more than if they just 100%. Had a fine, easygoing experience.
Yep.
It stands out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I had someone else send an email in or an Instagram message in after that saying like, oh, you should check out Send Cut Send, which is a company based
on their website today.
Yeah. So you might have seen that they've started shipping to Canada, which is super exciting. They now do like $30 flat rate shipping to Canada. Mm-hmm. And they do like tons of laser cut stuff.
Yeah. I was looking because I want to get some. We have these little badges that go on our guitars sometimes. Yep. It's an option. It says Frank Brothers instead of getting our hexagon logo.
Yes.
And instead of polished aluminum, like the top's polished.
Right.
But they don't have that as an option in their materials. So I'm wondering if they would do a different material other than what they offer on their website.
Like you specifically want polished aluminum or you just want aluminum?
Well, I want polished aluminum or I want some finish. Some I don't want it to be just raw.
Yeah, I think I think companies like Send Cut Send and Osh Cut are really set up to like do volume in those materials that they have.
That's what I figured. So yeah, that's why I started to look in other places. I mean, I could always just get it made out of whatever, some aluminum, I guess 6061. Yeah. What's the standard?
Yeah, 6061.
And maybe like
polish it.
Yeah, I don't want to polish it. It's really small and like fragile, but maybe sandblast it or something. Get some sort of,
why couldn't you just like mount it with wax to a block and then, you know, rub it over a surface plate with some sandpaper and done?
Yeah, or I could find somebody else and just give them pre-polished money aluminum
to do it. Yeah, right.
Like it just needs to have a polished surface or a brushed. It really doesn't matter. It just needs to be finished in some respect.
Well, what is stainless then?
Stainless is brushed?
Yeah, you can get, there's like Send Cut Send do like 4 or 5 different finishes of stainless. I think they do like a mirror and then they do like a satin brushed and a mill finish. And yeah, there's lots and lots of options for stainless because it's often used in like kitchens and shit, right? Where they need different finishes.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't see that on their list of options. They just have 304 and 316.
Yeah, you have to go into, like, you have to actually like put your part in and then choose the material.
Okay.
In the like checkout.
So what do you just upload a
DXF? DXF? Okay. Yeah.
This would be perfect. They've got 30 thou, which is I think what we use.
Yeah, I've been through the quote process with them a bunch of times, just like seeing, basically like taunting myself with the unavailability. But now that they're actually sending to Canada, it's pretty exciting. I've talked to a couple of laser cutting shops in Toronto and like the people that return your emails at all, you know, like I had one company, I was like, oh, I just need a couple of, you know, pieces cut. And they were like, oh yeah, you have to ship us like a full sheet of material and blah. And I was like,
Make this easy for me, like, please.
You don't want to, yeah, like, you're not keeping any material in stock. Like, you could have told me, like, oh, we don't do that thickness. How about this one? They're telling me they don't keep any material in stock. Like, yeah. I have to ship them some material, well, which is crazy.
See, that would be fine for me because I would just ship them this polished aluminum that you get from McMaster. But,
right.
Because, you know, a 2x4 sheet would, like, make a million of these. Right. But, yeah, I did some Googling and it just all seems a little rough around the edges, these places.
Yes.
Like they're just cutting big sheets of
big stuff
of mild steel into whatever.
Yeah, I mean, then there was one place that I dealt with previously. I talked to them about a quote and then I reached out again recently. I was like, oh, can you guys do this for me? And they're like, yeah, no problems. We'll send you a quote. Never heard from them again, you know, and it's just like, it's not enough time in the day to deal with like chasing that shit up constantly. Mm-hmm.
No, it's that's annoying, but yeah this is interesting. I wonder what the edge finish would be like. That's my only concern.
I believe that they deburr all the parts that they send out, actually.
How?
I don't know. They might put them through one of those like sheet finishing machines or something. You should just ask them.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll get in touch. Sweet. Cause that would be awesome. I mean, Mark was cutting them on machining them on his little router. And they're pretty intricate parts. So it's time consuming and annoying for him.
Yeah. Oh man. It's been, honestly, my brain's kind of fried. It's been a wild couple of weeks.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, it's been pretty crazy working the new job and trying to like wrangle all the other stuff as well. But.
Well, it's going to feel like a breeze then once you're settled.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and dude, just being able to like walk out to the shop.
Oh my God, I am jealous. If I'm driving, it's like 9 minutes and I'm a really pretty calm guy.
Except
driving is, I just find it so stressful because part of it's my fault. I'm like, it takes me 10 minutes to drive to the shop. There's no lights, I'm going to leave it I'm going to leave 10 minutes before I'm supposed to be at the shop.
Right.
You know, which is stupid. And then I'm like, oh, move, you idiot. Like,
right.
The light is green. Go.
You know? We talked about this a little bit before Christmas, but I've been driving for leisure since I got that racing wheel, the sim racing wheel.
Oh, right.
That thing is amazing. I got it like a couple of weeks ago.
Forgot about that.
Holy shit. Like, I have this thing strapped to my desk, and with it turned up all the way, if you like hit a bump on a rally track, it's like trying to tear my desk in half. It's like throwing shit off my
really?
Desk.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's super strong. And it's just the other wheel that I had was a very inexpensive one, and it really, you could feel the mechanism kind of like it had like drag. This one is literally an industrial servo bolted directly to a steering wheel. So like if the wheel doesn't want there to be any resistance, there isn't. You can just spin the steering wheel like it's on bearings.
Crazy.
But then, you know, when it turns on and is like emulating the steering rack in the car and stuff, it feels like a car. It's pretty nuts.
I'd like to try this.
Oh, anytime, buddy. You're very welcome.
Well, before you go ahead and move hours from
Toronto, there you go.
I'll have to come,
you should
here.
Come over. Yeah. Well, you and the family are welcome anytime for any length of time.
Okay, cool. All right. Summer vacations what do you call it? Are you going to call it a ranch? It's kind of got a ranch vibe.
Goff Ranch. Yeah.
You got to get yourself a hat and some boots.
I'm leaning more toward, you know, solar panels and one day in the distant future when I have money to burn, maybe a Cybertruck.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah. But yeah, that'll be in between then and now. I'm like, I really, as I said, I really want to build a race car. I really want to build a little rally car. And that's going to be something like dirt cheap, you know, like a used Volkswagen Golf GTI that I buy for like $3,000 and then you know, super bolt some racing parts to. Yeah.
But great thing for you about you guys have a car, and for all practical purposes, that's just going to be able to just get you guys around. Like, you don't need a commuter. Yep. You don't need, you know,
no. You just, we'll hardly leave the house anyway, honestly. I think like we'll probably leave the house like once or twice a week, you know.
So how far is like amenities, grocery store?
10 minutes. Movie theater. Not even. Yeah. Grocery store is like not even 10 minutes.
Okay.
And then we have some friends that live pretty local. So like 20 minute drive away.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and there's like a little community center down the street that's apparently very active.
Oh.
Like they have like spaghetti dinners and stuff.
Yeah, so you can join a, like the Shriners or something like that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there's a baseball diamond.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's going to be real different. Real, real different. Rural, but I think Ontario. It'll be good. Yeah.
Well, okay. I think we should wrap it there, but congratulations.
All right, buddy.
Big moves.
Nick's sick of me already.
Well, I'm all hopped up on coffee and I should take advantage of that energy.
It is, by the way, people, when we're recording this, it is right now, it is 9:15 in the PM and Nick just chugged a giant cup of coffee while we're recording this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
And I didn't sleep last night.
Why?
So I built a IKEA cabinet, like a dresser for Beatrice's room. And it has this IKEA piney sort of weird smell, like almost chemically, but pine. And, you know, I didn't think much of it. But B woke up in the middle of the night, which isn't that uncommon. I went into her room to go settle her. And I was just like, whapped in the face with this pungent smell of IKEA piney formaldehyde. I don't know what the fuck it is.
Oh, weird.
So I just grabbed her and I brought her into our room and I put the ceiling fan on in her room, opened the drawers to let the whole thing air out.
Right.
So she slept
in. I guess it's just brand new and needs to air out.
I made it. I finished it like right before I put her to bed.
Right.
Anyways, so she slept in my spot. I'm like, and I slept like a dog at the foot of the bed, basically. and she's a 2-year old.
Rightful place in life.
Yeah. She takes up zero space, but manages to sprawl. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the coffee's partly for that.
Jeez, buddy. Well, keep all your fingers intact. Lovely talking with you. Next episode, I will have actually had time to like catch up on the space news and stuff. So we'll talk about some space stuff.
Yeah.
We'll talk about all sorts of things.
Okay. Well, I'll look forward to it. Mm-hmm.
All right, buddy.
All right.
Good to see you. Good to talk with you. Good to talk with everyone. And we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Cheers.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.